7 verse 24 of the Bhagavad Gita. Avyaktam vyaktim apannam mante mama buddhayah param bhavam ajananto mama vyayam manuttamam. Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Unintelligent men who know me not think that I have assumed this form and personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is changeless and supreme. In the last several sessions, we have been discussing different kinds of worshippers. Several weeks ago, you will remember that we discussed that there are how many kinds of worshippers of God altogether? Five. There are five different kinds of worshippers of God who worship God differently according to their different conceptions. If everyone had the same conception of God, then there would be only one kind. But because people have different conceptions of God, therefore there are different types of worshippers. So there are five different kinds of worshippers as stated by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. The first kind of worshipper is, let us briefly review what we have done in the last month or two. The first kind of worshipper whom we discussed, who was he? Yes, anyone remembers? We are now in the last 8 or 9 sessions discussing just these different kinds of worshippers. Not 8 or 9, perhaps 6. Yes? No, that is the second kind. Yes? No. As they come in the second kind. This category are called the Mahatmas. Why the Mahatmas? What is the definition of a Mahatma? Who is a Mahatma? Great soul, but how do you identify who is a great soul? Yes? Who is always engaged in worshipping the Supreme Lord with devotion. Always engaged in devotional service to the Lord. That is the primary characteristic of the Mahatma. He has taken complete shelter of God, leaving aside all other material shelters. Therefore, he is called a great soul. A Mahatma is called a great soul because of his spiritual efforts, Mahatma. So we cannot rubber stamp somebody in the economic, social or political fields as being a Mahatma. Because the word Mahatma essentially refers to a spiritual accomplishment. Somebody who is spiritually advanced is called a Mahatma. Not necessarily somebody who is socially or politically very active. So Mahatma means one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. Who has taken complete shelter of the Lord. So we should all strive to be Mahatmas. We should all strive to come to this first category of worshippers of God. They are the ideal worshippers because they have the complete understanding of what God is. Their conception of God is perfect. So we should also try to be like them. Now there are also others who worship the Supreme Lord but who are not quite in the category of Mahatma. Why? Some of you have mentioned already just now. Because they are motivated by what? By different kinds of material desires. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritano arjuna artho jigyasur arthaarthi jnani cha bharatarshabha. Some people, they seek wealth. Therefore they approach God and worship Him. Some people approach God because they are distressed. Some people approach God because they are inquisitive. And others approach God because they are seeking the Absolute. Of course, of all these four, the seeker of the Absolute, the Jnani, he is the best of all. And when he completely surrenders to the Lord, he becomes a Mahatma. So these four category of people, they are called Sukritinas. Why are they called Sukritinas? This revision is very important, otherwise we forget what we have discussed. Yes? Yes, but Sukritina, that is not why they are called Sukritina. Pious activities. Kritina means activities, Sukritina means pious activities. You see, unless you have some degree of piety, you cannot come to Krishna. We have seen that somebody who is distressed, he comes to Krishna. But not all people who are distressed come to Krishna. Some people who are distressed, they take to drugs. Some people who are distressed take to, let's say, some form of political activism. Some people who are distressed commit suicide. So different people react in different ways when they are in distress. But when one has sufficiently done pious activities in the previous lives, then in a position of distress, automatically one thinks of God. One approaches Krishna. You know the story of Gajendra. Gajendra in his earlier life was the great king Indradumna. Somehow or the other, he could not complete his devotional life. So he was cursed. It's a long story, we won't go into that now. But he was cursed to become an elephant. And in his next life as an elephant, he was living like any other elephant. But when the time came and the time of danger, impending death, at that time, all the memories of his prayers from the previous life, they came back to him. And he began to offer all those wonderful prayers that he had offered in the previous life, which came back to him. Why? Because he had that stock with him. So he was able to take shelter of Krishna in times of distress. So unless you have done pious activities, you cannot come to Krishna. So this is the second kind of worshippers of God. They worship the Supreme Lord, but because they are motivated, their worship is not considered to be perfect. But if they simply continue worshipping the Lord, somehow or the other, sooner or later, their motivated mentality will be purified and they will come to the platform of pure devotion or pure bhakti. Last time I quoted one important shloka from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Kama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradhi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Several times we have quoted this shloka. What is the meaning of this? Anyone remembers? Very important. Akama, sarvakama. It's a hint. Whether you are free of kama, material desires, or whether you are full of material desires, or whether you seek liberation from this material entanglement, what should you do? Watch television, make money, what should you do? Yajeta purusham param tivrena bhakti yogena. Whatever be your situation in life, the Bhagavatam says, simply worship Krishna, that's all. Don't worry that I have so many material desires, or I'm pure, or I'm impure. Doesn't matter what your situation in life is. Wherever you are, whatever you are, whoever you are, if you simply decide to worship Krishna and continue to worship Krishna, you can make your life perfect. This is the injunction of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, even the Sukritinas, if they continue to worship the Lord, what will happen? They will get purified of all their material desires, because of which they had come to the Lord in the first place. Like Dhruva. Maharaj Dhruva, as you know, he had the desire to obtain a kingdom that was greater than his father's kingdom. And he approached God with that intention. But because of his tapasya and the worship that he did, he was becoming purified. And God became so pleased with him that he appeared in front of him. And when God appeared directly in front of Dhruva, he was only a small child of 5 years. But then Dhruva's desire for a kingdom completely disappeared. And he prayed to the Lord that I was actually seeking broken pieces of glass, and now I have found a rare, polished, wonderful diamond. So now I don't care for those broken pieces of glass. In other words, when one person who approaches Krishna with material desires, he surrenders to him and he tastes the nectar and the sweetness of bhakti, then he forgets all his material desires. And he considers the very motive for which he had come to Krishna as being worthless, like broken pieces of glass. So therefore the Sukritinas, when they stay on sufficiently long, worshipping Krishna, then they can also be elevated to the higher stage of Mahatma. So these are the first two categories of worshippers of God. Who are the third worshippers of God? Third category of worshippers of God, whom we discussed. Demigod worshippers. Now how is it that we say that demigod worshippers are worshippers of God, when we have taken so much pain to say that they are different from God, that they are not God? Four lectures we have spent on this. So why is it then we say that worshippers of demigod, they are also worshippers of God? Yes? But why are they included in the category of worshippers of God, five worshippers of God? That is one, that's correct. Anything else? Because they are indirectly worshipping Krishna. Why are they indirectly worshipping Krishna? Yes? He is everywhere, but that is not the answer to the question. Yes? Well, no. Exactly. Not again. They are part and parcel of Krishna. That is the correct answer. Because they are part and parcel of Krishna, so when you worship the demigods, you are actually intending to worship the whole, but without proper knowledge of who is the part and who is the whole. We gave the example, one illustration to explain this point. Does anyone remember this example? So many times we have given this analogy. Yes? I didn't hear. Root and the branch, yes. Can you explain that? Pour water on the root of the tree, the water is distributed everywhere. So who is the root? Who is the branch? Krishna is the root and branches are the demigods. So when you water the branch, are you watering the tree or are you not watering the tree? But are you watering the tree? Yes? But it's the tree, isn't it? It's part of the tree, but you are watering the tree. But it is not the proper way to water the tree. You are watering the tree because the branch is also a part of the tree. But if you want the branch to get nourished, and if you want the branch to bear fruit and flowers and leaves, then you must not water the branch, but you must water the root. Therefore, those who are worshipping demigods, they are also worshipping Krishna indirectly, because the demigods are also part and parcel of Krishna. Just as everything is part and parcel of Krishna. Everything is Krishna's energy. So in that way, everything is worship of God. But it is not the proper way to worship God. If you want to really worship God properly, you have to worship Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Person. So therefore, worshippers of demigods are considered also worshippers of God. And in any case, their worship is intended for the Supreme Lord, and whatever they get in return from the demigods is also given by Krishna. Last time we saw one important fact, that without the help of Krishna within the heart, nobody can have faith in the demigods. Do you remember that? And without Krishna empowering the demigods from within, they cannot grant the benedictions of the worshippers. So these two are important things. The demigods cannot even invoke our love for them on their own, unless Krishna gives us that faith from within. Because we have material desires and we wish to fulfill these material desires, so Krishna has a process. The process is you should approach the demigods. And he builds up our faith in a particular demigod so that we will surrender to him, beg certain favors from him. And then the demigod, on the other hand, is also empowered by Krishna. Look, I have empowered your devotee to have faith in you. Now I will empower you to fulfill his desires. So in this way, it is Krishna only who brings together the devotee of the demigod and the demigod. So Krishna is playing the crucial role. He is the intermediary. So our worship is actually meant for Krishna, but it is performed unknowingly, avidhi purvakam. And also, whatever the demigods give us is also actually coming from Krishna. So therefore, Krishna is the ultimate object, but because it is done avidhi purvakam, therefore, these people in the third category of worshippers of God, they are not considered very intelligent. Alpamedhasam. And also because the fruits derived from such worship are temporary. They will not last for very long, because everything in this material world lasts only temporarily. So these are the three categories of worshippers. Now we come to the fourth category. Now we have read the translation today. So what do you think is the fourth category of worshipper? Impersonal. Very good. Those who worship the impersonal aspect of the Lord. It's a very important category. Just like those who worship demigods, because demigod worship is such an important subject in India, we discussed over four Wednesdays. Also the subject of impersonalism is also very, very important. So we will also try to spend maybe two or perhaps three sessions discussing this impersonal aspect of the Lord. It is very, very important. You see, there are two kinds of spiritualists in this world. One kind of spiritualist is called a personalist, and the other kind of spiritualist is called impersonalist. It's not very difficult to guess. So the personalist, he understands that God is ultimately a person, and therefore he renders bhakti, or he renders service to that supreme person. On the other hand, the impersonalist, he doesn't exactly engage in the devotional service of the Lord, but he spends his time in meditating upon the impersonal aspect of the Lord, upon the formless aspect of the Lord. So he thinks that in the ultimate analysis, the Lord has no form, that the Lord is formless, nirakar. So he worships or meditates upon that nirakar, nirgun, Brahma. You've heard this? In India in particular, you will find very commonly three kinds of people. One are those who are worshippers of demigods. Two, those who are impersonalists. Third, those who are atheists. That we will come to much later on. That is the fifth category of worshipper. Atheists are also worshipping in one way. That how we will come to at a later time. So these are the three categories of people. So we can see that there is so much misconception in this country and all over the world, of course. But it is a pity that such misconceptions are so rampant even in this land of Bharatvarsha, which is actually the land of Punya Bhumi, land where Lord Krishna has advented himself. So people are under the misconception that God is impersonal and he is formless, and my goal in life is simply to merge into his existence. That actually I am also God, and all I have to do is to get liberated from this illusion that I am the body and merge into that oneness, that formless oneness. So Lord Krishna, whenever he comes across somebody who is not in the proper conception, without mincing any words, he says what he feels about them. About the demigods, how did he address them? Number one, he addressed them as those with less intelligence. Antavattu phalam tesham tad bhavati alpa medhasam. He said those who worship demigods are alpa medhasam, or less intelligent. Last time we saw he used another expression. Kamais taiste hritagyana. Hritagyana means that those people who worship demigods, they do so out of intense material desire, and they are hritagyanaha, which means they have lost all common sense. They have lost all their sense. They have lost all their intelligence. Therefore, they are worshipping the demigods. So very clearly, Lord Krishna has stated the position of demigod worship. No two ways about it. Nobody by juggling and twisting words can ever misunderstand this. It is very clear. And now, as far as the worshippers of the impersonal are concerned, those who think that Lord, that Supreme Lord is ultimately impersonal, nirakar, nirgun, for them, Lord Krishna has another name for them. What is that? Abuddhayaha. What's the meaning of abuddhayaha? Very intelligent? Less intelligent. He says they have no intelligence. What kind of people have no intelligence? Avyaktam vyaktim apannam manyante mam. Avyakta means unmanifest, formless, without any shape, without any form, without any qualities, And Vyakta means person, personality, who is manifest. Now we are all manifest personalities sitting here in front of me. So Apannam, Apannam means to achieve, to transform, to obtain. So Manyante means to those who think like that. Ma means Krishna. So Lord Krishna is saying, those people who think that I am actually Avyakta, but I have obtained or I have come to this form of Vyakta form by transformation from the non-manifest or impersonal, such people are Abuddhayaha. In other words, those people who think that Krishna is actually impersonal, but he has just accepted a form now to perform certain leelas. Very, very common conception, believe me. If you go out to any kind of spiritual gathering, the chances are 99.9% of those gatherings will talk about this impersonal aspect. So one has to be very cautious. They will say ultimately the absolute truth is impersonal, and all the avatars, Krishna, Ram, Narsingha, etc., they are simply transformations of the impersonal. That impersonal, absolute, formless void, he takes on a form in this material world to perform certain leelas. And therefore, the form that he takes is also imaginary. It is material, just like your body and my body. Therefore, such people are also called Mayavad, Mayavadis. And this philosophy is called Mayavada. Vada means philosophy. And Mayavad means the philosophy of considering that even God's body, Krishna's body, is Maya. Therefore, Mayavadi. So such people are considered by Krishna to be Abuddhayaha. And then he goes on to say, why are they Abuddhayaha? Because Param Bhavam Ajananto. They do not know my supreme nature, Ajananto. They don't know. They are ignorant. Therefore, in their ignorance, they feel that I am impersonal, that I am formless, I have no qualities. And they do not know Mama Avyayam Anuttamam. Avyaya means imperishable, that which can never be destroyed. Anuttamam means the finest, the subtlest, spiritual, completely spiritual. Therefore, Lord Krishna is describing here that all those who are worshipping or think that the Lord is impersonal in the ultimate analysis, they are all less intelligent. Now you may question, so is the Lord personal or is the Lord, is he impersonal or is he both? What do you think? Both? He is personal. Now I very clearly said he is not impersonal, so nobody will say he is impersonal. But two categories, two answers. Somebody says he is personal, somebody says he is both. So why would you say that he is personal? Only. Or rather, why would you say he is both personal and impersonal? Anyone? Yes? You're correct, but some more you would like to add? Sun and the energy. The question is, how can something be simultaneously formless and still have a form? Just like the sun and the sunshine. The sun is at one place situated in the solar system. It is generating sunshine. The sunshine is simultaneously one and different from the sun. This example also we have seen many times before. So when the sunshine comes into the room, we may say that the sun is here, but actually it doesn't mean that physically the sun is here in the room. The sun has no meaning without sunshine, and sunshine cannot exist without the sun. So the sunshine and the sun are inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. Similarly, Krishna, it has a form, and he's also, he has a formless aspect. This is also called Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this point is very nicely described. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. The absolute truth is understood at three levels, at three phases. The first is called Brahma, the impersonal aspect. The second is called Paramatma, or the localized aspect. And the third is called Bhagavan, who is the origin. the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, Shri Krishna. So these are the three levels of the Absolute Truth. And the three different kinds of spiritualists understand the Lord in these three different ways. What is the category of spiritualists who understand the Brahman or who understand the impersonal aspect of the Lord? The Jnanis. Those who follow the path of Jnana Yoga, they understand the Absolute Truth only up to the level of Brahman. Then who are the people who understand the Paramatma? The Yogis, the Ashtanga Yogis. Their understanding goes beyond Brahman, but it extends only up to Paramatma. Paramatma is the form of the Lord who is in the heart of every living being. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishtati. He has form. The Paramatma form, the Paramatma aspect of the Lord has form. And He is everywhere. He is also in every atom. So, the Paramatma is realized by the Ashtanga Yogis. And what about Bhagavan? Who realizes Bhagavan? The Bhaktas, the devotees. Only the devotees are able to understand the Supreme Absolute Truth in His ultimate position, as He is the highest and the truest and most original aspect of the Lord. Now, because the Bhakta has understood Krishna, therefore automatically he understands Paramatma and he also understands Brahman. Just like a person in the 10th standard, he knows 5th standard arithmetic and he also knows 1st standard arithmetic automatically, because he has gone through those stages. So similarly, the Bhakta, he understands the Absolute Truth in completeness, in perfection. So therefore the Absolute Truth is a 3-in-1 Absolute Truth. Just like you have 3-in-1 ice cream, so this is 3-in-1 Absolute Truth. But originally, he is a person. And the person is the source of the other two. The person is the source of the impersonal aspect, just like the sun is the source of the sunshine. Now, although the two exist simultaneously, still, which is more important, the sunshine or the sun? The sun, because the sun is the origin. Similarly, although Krishna and Brahman both exist simultaneously, therefore, Krishna is more important because He is the source of the Brahman. In the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Brahmano hi pratishthaham. He says, I am the source of the Brahman. The Brahman is originating from me. Actually, everything is resting in the Brahman. But Brahman is resting in Krishna. Brahma, who is the... This is not the same. This Brahma and Brahman are different. Brahma is the Brahma of Brahma Vishnu Mahesh. And this Brahman is different. So we should not confuse. Sometimes, when we first come to spiritual life, we get confused. Brahma, that's another Sanskrit word that means illusion. So Brahma means illusion, Brahma means the impersonal, and Brahma means the person Brahma who is the secondary creator, the demigod Brahma. So please do not get confused between Brahma and Brahma. They all three are different. So be careful how we speak. So Brahma in his Brahma Samhita, he has very beautifully stated the relationship between Krishna and the impersonal Brahman. He says, Yasya prabha prabhavato jagatanda koti koteshvashesha vasudhadi vibhuti bhinnam tad brahma nishkalam anantamashesha bhutam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. He says, I worship Govinda, the Supreme Lord, Govindam Adi Purusham, from whose body the impersonal Brahman is emanating. It is yasya prabha prabhavato. Prabha means the effulgence, the radiance. So the Brahman is nothing but the bodily luster, or the bodily effulgence, or the bodily radiance, the tej of Lord Krishna's spiritual body. That is Brahman or Brahma. So, and this same Brahman is actually the resting place for the innumerable koti koti shvashesha bhavati. Of all the innumerable planets are resting in this Brahma Jyoti. This Brahman is also called the Brahma Jyoti. Jyoti because it is the effulgence. Just like the sun is radiating sunlight, so Krishna's spiritual, transcendental, Satchidananda body is radiating Brahman. So in that way we see that Krishna is a person, God is a person ultimately, but he has an impersonal aspect. Now because Krishna is spiritual, Brahman is spiritual, Brahman is also as good as Krishna. It is only the impersonal aspect of Krishna. We should not think, however, that Brahman is anything less. It is less only in terms of the ananda. Krishna is full Satchidananda. In the Brahman, at the most you can understand Sat and Chit. You can understand eternity, you can understand knowledge, but you cannot have the full experience of ananda. If you have to have ananda, you have to have form, you have to have personality. And when you have form and personality, you interact and have relationships with other personalities, and then the ananda comes. Can you have ananda all by yourself? Would you like to sit in one room, locked up for years and years together? You will go mad. You must deal with people. You must have relationships with people. Eventually, even if you are fighting with some people, you will say, doesn't matter, let me at least go and be there. At least I can talk with him. So therefore, because Krishna is a person, we are also persons, there is an eternal relationship between all these persons and Krishna. And that relationship is one of love, of bhakti. But this love, as we have seen last time, is not the love of this world, the so-called love of this world. It is true spiritual love. And the nature of this spiritual love is that it is ever expanding, ever growing, unending. So therefore it is also the cause of unlimited ananda. Therefore Krishna is called Anandamaya, full of bliss. He is Abhyasat, he is a reservoir of all these good divine qualities of bliss. So when you understand Krishna as a person and relate to him as a person, you also get linked to that reservoir of ananda, and you can also explain or experience that very same ananda. So the difference between Krishna and the impersonal Brahman is that Brahman is formless, Krishna has form. Krishna is the origin, Brahman is the radiation or the emanation. Krishna has unlimited ananda, and Brahman, there is no experience of ananda. But both are spiritual. Both are sat and chit. So in this way, the jnanis, they may reach up to the level of Brahman, but they do not experience completion. They do not experience a complete perfection of ananda. It is only the bhakta who can experience that. So therefore, the relationship between the impersonal and personal aspects of the Supreme Lord must be very clearly understood by us. So he is simultaneously impersonal and personal. We have no experience of any form that is spiritual. In our experience, form means material form. Form means, let's say, the form of your body, the form of this microphone, the form of this light, the form of this earth, the form of this universe. Everything has form in our experience, and whatever has form is temporary. It is material. So we think that how can God have form? Because if God has form, then he must be material. So people think, no, then God cannot have form, because only material things have form, and if there is form, it must be material. Am I getting too complicated or what? Everyone is able to follow? Yes. I will repeat slowly once again. Some people find it difficult to accept that God can be a person. They say that form means material form. They cannot understand some concept of a spiritual form, because in their experience, form is only material. Because they have never experienced spiritual form. So when we say God has a form, they say then God must have a material form, and therefore he must be limited, because all material forms are limited. So they say that is a contradiction in terms. How can you say God has a form? Because then God will have material form, and that will be limited, and therefore God is limited. So what kind of God is he? He is not God. But actually the truth is that God has a spiritual form. Sat Chit Anand Vigraha. Brahma very clearly states, Ishvara Paramaha Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govindaha Sarvakarana Karanam. He states that Krishna is a supreme controller of all controllers. There is no control. And he has a form, Vigraha, that is Satchidananda. And he is the origin of all. If you say that Krishna cannot have a form, then you are limiting him, actually. Those who are impersonalists, they say that if you give Krishna a form, you are limiting him. But actually, if you say Krishna cannot have a form, then you are limiting him. Why? Can anyone say? Yes? Yes? No. Yes? Those who are impersonalists, you see, it is very important to try to understand some philosophy. Sometimes it gets a little complicated, so we have to apply our mind. Because sometimes we spice it some little stories and this and that, but ultimately there is no escaping. Trying to understand with our brains some bit of this philosophy. This is very, very essential to increase our faith. So although it may sound a little boring sometime, please try to pay very careful attention. So, these people, where was I actually? Impersonalists, yes. So the impersonalists, they say that Krishna, if you say that he has a form, then you are limiting him. But the devotees say, if you say Krishna cannot have form, then you are limiting him. So why can devotees say like that? How is it devotees say like that? If there is something that is not there within God, then what kind of God is he? Lord Krishna explains, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattah sarvam pravartate. He says, I am the source of everything, spiritual, material, and everything comes from me. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Lord Krishna doesn't say, Aham 99% sarvasya prabhavo. Does he say? He says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo, which means everything, 100% comes from him. Therefore, formlessness is there in this world. Air is formless. So God has to be formless. He must have an aspect of formlessness. On the other hand, you and I have form. The giraffe and cat and dog have form. Even the ants have form. So why is it that God should not have form? How can he be complete and perfect? How can he be the complete whole if he is lesser than his part? If I have form and I am part of God, how can God not have form? How can I have something that God doesn't have? Yes, surely God has an impersonal aspect also. So when the impersonalists say that when you say that God cannot be formless, that God is formless, we agree. Yes, God is formless. But he is not only formless. Principally, primarily, he has a form, and that form has an impersonal aspect. So God must include everything within his creation and more. Otherwise he cannot be complete and perfect. So God, because we have form, God must have form. Because there is formlessness in this creation, God must also have a formless aspect. Therefore God is simultaneously formless and he has a form. So people say that because he has a form, his form must be limited. But they do not understand that spiritual form can be unlimited. In the Isha Upanishad, the very invocation, it is said, Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachyate Purnam Purnasya Purnasya Adaya Purnam Eva Avashishyate. What is the meaning of this shloka? We have also dealt with it. Yes? Yes? Correct? Yes. Excellent. Very good. The Supreme Lord is the complete whole. W-H-O-L-E, not H-O-L-E. Because there are some people who are called voidists, who say God is a whole. Whole means zero, nothing. It's all blank, void. But we are talking of different kind of whole. W-H-O-L-E. So the complete whole includes everything. Everything emanates from the complete whole. And whatever emanates from the complete whole is also complete and perfect in itself. And although so many complete and perfect units emanate from God, God remains the complete whole. If I have 100 rupees in my pocket, not very often I have, very rarely. But even the times when somehow rarely I do have, when I spend something from that, then I have 50 rupees left or 70 rupees left. I can never have 100 rupees left after spending something when I have only 100 rupees. But Krishna, so many things are emanating from him, unlimitedly. But still, he remains as he is. No reduction in him, no diminution, no diminishing in his power, in his form. He remains as he is. And those of you who have studied mathematics in school, there is something called infinity. Yes? How many of you know what is infinity? Infinity minus 1 is how much? Infinity. Infinity minus 1000 is how much? Infinity minus 10 lakhs is how much? And infinity minus infinity is how much? Infinity. In other words, Krishna is infinite. That is what it means to be the Lord. People who say, I am God, they are not infinite. When Krishna, because he is infinite, so many units emanate from him. All the avatars come from him. All the material, spiritual worlds come from him. But Krishna has no difficulty. Effortlessly, he produces these emanations. And he remains happy. If we even run about here and there, we get tired and we feel, oh, I have lost something. And then we have to take rest for 2 hours. But Krishna, he does everything. And still he is complete and perfect. 100% complete. That is the meaning of spiritual form. That from his original spiritual form is emanating everything else. But that form remains as he is. It doesn't change. There is some small leela in this regard. Once upon a time, 5,000 years ago, Brahma, the same Brahma whom we have been talking about, the demigod, he visited Dwarka. And he wanted to understand what is the... He was actually seeing Krishna playing as a cowherd boy. And when he saw Krishna, and he knew that Krishna is God, but when he saw that this Krishna is playing games with cowherd boys like some ordinary boys, so he was a little bewildered. And what he saw was that he is sitting with some boys, cowherd boys, and eating tiffin. And they are sharing each other's tiffin, and they are putting each other's food into each other's mouths. And they taste it, and when they have tasted, then they taste that back again. And this way they are having fun. And then somebody is drinking some buttermilk and his cheeks become full. And Krishna is drinking and the cowherd boy comes and slaps his cheeks. And there is all the buttermilk comes out. So in this way Krishna is playing with his cowherd friends. And Brahma is watching all this and thinking, this can be God? What kind of God is this? He can't even hold buttermilk in his mouth and he's God. So he was very bewildered. And he wanted to understand and test, is this really Krishna? Is this really God or not? So he came, and while they were happily eating their prasad, he stole all the calves that they had brought for grazing, and he hid them in a cave in the mountain. And at that time, Krishna, all the cowherd friends, they wanted to drink water. So Krishna said, don't worry, I will go and get water from the Yamuna for you. So he went, and meanwhile, Brahma thought, I will do one more trick. I have hid all the calves. Now I will also hide all these cowherd boys. Let us see now what this little boy does when he comes back. So he hid all the calves also, he hid all the cowherd boys also in the cave. And when Krishna came back, of course Krishna knows already in advance what's going to happen. But he was playing the part of a small boy. Oh, what has happened? Where have all the calves gone? Where have my friends gone? And then immediately understood that Brahma has done this mischief. So very peacefully, very calmly and coolly, he simply expanded himself like this, just like that. Svabhaviki ga jnana bala kriyacha. Automatically, without any effort, he expanded himself. And he expanded himself into what? Into all the cowherd boys. And not only into all the cowherd boys, but also into all those calves. And he expanded himself as the perfect duplicates of all of them. All the cowherd boys, the doubles were there, double role, all of them were there. So when they went back to their homes, their parents could not distinguish that this is not my son. The cows could not distinguish that this is not my calf. Identical features, the nose, the eyes, the ears, everything identical. The way of speaking, the voice, the habits, everything was identical. But there was one thing that the parents couldn't understand. That every day I am seeing my child, but today I am feeling such an extra special affection for my child, I am unable to understand why. Similarly, the cows, they were feeling Every day I have so much affection for my calf, but I don't understand why today I am losing all control of my senses and we are all running down the hill. All the cows, when they saw their calves, very madly, like mad cows, they ran down on a rampage down the slope and they went towards their calves because of overwhelming affection for their calves. So they certainly looked like their children, but they couldn't understand and explain why they had suddenly so much affection. And this lasted for one whole year. But Brahma, after only one moment of his time, which is 1 year of our time on this earth, he thought, let me go and see what is happening now. But in the one moment of Brahma's time, what had happened? 1 year had passed by and Krishna had maintained this. And Balaram, only after 1 year he began to understand, something is fishy. What is happening here? What is wrong? And then he asked Krishna, so what have you done? Tell me. And then Krishna told him. So when Brahma came back, what did he find? He went there and found Krishna playing the same thing all over again. So he was bewildered. So immediately he went to his cave. And what did he see in the cave? He thought that Krishna must have somehow found all these boys and the calves in the cave and he must have brought them out. So very quickly when he went to the cave, he found, lo and behold, same calves and the same cowherd boys are there sleeping as they were. And he came again back to where Krishna was. And again the same cowherd boys and same calves. He went back to the cave. Same thing here and there. So Brahma was truly bewildered. And then he understood, yes, this Krishna is perfect. And when he came to Krishna at that time, all the cowherd boys, that is Krishna, Krishna's expansions, they all transformed into the four-handed Vishnu form of Krishna. All those cowherd boys, and not only the cowherd boys, but even the calves transformed into the four-handed Vishnu form. So we can see how Krishna, the baby Krishna, the boy Krishna, effortlessly transformed himself, expanded himself to form all these different cowherd boys and calves. Effortlessly. So Krishna's spiritual form was there, as he was. But when he expanded himself unlimitedly, there was no reduction in his form. He was as he is. So therefore we can understand that Krishna has a form and that he can expand himself unlimitedly and still maintain his form as he is. So this is very, very important. Therefore we understand originally in the ultimate analysis, Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is a person and the impersonal is an emanation or one aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we will discuss more and more about this in future sessions. Now we will have darshan and kirtan. So please be with us for that. So are there any questions?
Can you just explain that concept again? Earlier once in the lecture, sometime back, you had said that the Paramatma aspect has, the Brahman aspect has only the Chit, Sat potency. The Paramatma, Sat plus Chit, and the Bhagavan aspect has all the three. And in today's lecture, you said that Brahman has also Sat and Chit. So what is the difference between Paramatma and Brahman then? Because both would have Sat and Chit.
You see, generally, the yogis, they aspire for the Paramatma realization. At least that is what they are supposed to do. Dhyana vasthita tadgatena manasa pashyanti yam yogina. So in Ashtanga Yoga, the process is that you have to focus your mind upon the super soul and the heart, Lord Vishnu. But also the process of Ashtanga Yoga is used by the impersonalists. So depending on one's level of progress in the path, one may either become a Brahman realized person or a Paramatma realized person. If you realize Paramatma, you realize the Sat and the Chit features of the Lord. If you're Brahman realized, you realize only the Sat feature of the Lord. The Brahman actually, it has only the aspects of knowledge and eternity, Sat and Chit, but it lacks the feature of Ananda. So yogis also achieve that particular destination unless by virtue of their yoga, their devotional practice, they mature into bhaktas. For them to become devotees of Krishna.
Can you explain why chit potency in Brahman? The aspect of the chit potency.
Because Brahman is also spirit. Spirit is full of knowledge.
Then what is the difference between the two? Paramatma and Brahman.
The difference is that you have a localized aspect. There is a relationship. There is bhakti. There is some bhakti to some extent. It can progress into the stage of pure devotion. But if your understanding of the Paramatma is not proper, then you can just become Brahman realized. You can also go for the impersonal aspect. The Paramatma is an intermediate stage of realization, whereas the Brahman is the first stage. Automatically has realized the other two, if he realizes Krishna, Bhagavan. Yes? Any questions?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Means, how would you consider a person who worships demigods? Of course, you say today, he's considered to be less intelligent. But would you call him an atheist?
He is what is called a polytheist or a pantheist, which means many gods. Either he may imagine that particular demigod whom he is worshipping is supreme and all others are not supreme. Or he may think, like many impersonalists do, that all are supreme. So either way, our worship is not correct. So one who considers anyone other than the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna or Lord Vishnu, to be the supreme, he is considered from one point of view to be an atheist. So strictly speaking, because he is negating the supremacy of Lord Krishna, from that point of view he is called an atheist. So the demigod worshipper, he may believe that there is some supreme controller, but because of the ignorance of who that supreme controller is, he is led on the wrong path. But as we have discussed in the earlier sessions, if somehow or the other he worships the demigod purely according to the scriptural injunctions, then gradually he will be elevated to the platform of Krishna consciousness. It may take many lives.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
You said that Lord is having form and also formless. He is in everybody's heart as Paramatma. He is situated in ant and up to the elephant, right? And when he has a form, he has form of Lord Krishna. Why is it that he has only a human form? Why not an elephant form?
It is not that he has only human form. There is one argument that people say that we paint a picture or make a murti of God in a particular way to model it according to how we are formed. So they say because we are shaped like this with two hands and two legs, so we make God like that. But actually the opposite is true. Man is made in the image of God. I think that's what is said in the Bible. So man is made in the image of God. So originally Krishna is the Supreme Person. And he is exactly as you saw him on the altar just 5 minutes back. That is his original form. Now nevertheless, Krishna takes on many forms. He takes the form of a fish. He can take the form of a half man and half lion. He can take the form of a tortoise, of a boar. He takes on so many wonderful forms and performs wonderful pastimes. But we should know that each of these forms that Lord Krishna accepts is a completely spiritual and transcendental form. So Krishna's original form is a human-like form. It's not a human form, it's human-like. Because it's shaped like ours, so we shouldn't think that it's human. Similarly, because Krishna may appear as a fish, in the shape of a fish, we shouldn't think that he is just like any other fish. So like that, Krishna has innumerable forms. But the original form is as you saw him on the altar, Shyam Sundar Krishna, Govinda. Yes?
Brahma and Maheshwar, both of them are demigods. But usually Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwar, all the three names are taken together. So why is it so? Is it wrong? People who call Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwar together, or Guru Brahma, Guru Maheshwar, Vishnu, Guru Maheshwar, are they saying wrong? What should be our reaction to them?
It's just like in any company, You have marketing director, finance director and production director all together in the board meeting, isn't it? So all three are necessary. So like that, all three of them are directors of this material universe.
But
above all three directors, you have one chairman. And a chairman usually doesn't interfere in daily affairs. He leaves that to the directors. So Krishna is like that chairman. He doesn't interfere in daily activities. He leaves the task of creation, sustenance and destruction to these three. So your question is, why are these three put together? Because their activities deal with the working of this universe, with the creation, sustenance and destruction of the universe. Brahma is for creation, Vishnu for sustenance, Shiva for destruction.
So this also means that we should not be calling Vishnu as the supreme personality of Godhead.
Vishnu is the supreme personality of Godhead, but he is the form that Krishna takes for discharging the function of sustaining the universe. He is the same Krishna. Like sometimes you have chairman and managing director, not just chairman, right? C and MD, or chairman and managing director. Am I right in companies? So he performs, he's a chairman, but he also performs simultaneously the role of managing director. He also looks after daily affairs. But on the board, he's chairman. So like that, Krishna takes the form of the director among all three, is the boss among all the three also. Because you see, it is very easy to destroy something. It is a little more difficult to create something, but it is very, very difficult to maintain something. So Krishna has to come himself as Vishnu to maintain this universe. One last question. Yes?
Hare Krishna. It said that after 84 lakh species of life, one gets the human form. And it's only in this form that one can get God realization.
Yes.
But as we read the Puranas and we come across various anecdotes and aspects of it, we find that time and again that God realization is also seen in the animal form, like you have the Gajendra Moksha. Then again, in the more recent case, for example, it's a very classic case that at Guruvayur temple, that elephant case.
Yes.
Because it showed very clear signs of God realization, and that's why the elephant is so glorified. So how do we explain this and how do we understand it?
You see, ultimately, devotion to God is transcendental, which means it transcends any material barrier. It even transcends which kind of body you have. One may have elephant body, dog body, cat body, human body. So spiritual bhakti is completely on the transcendental platform. So it doesn't matter from one point of view which kind of body you have. So you have rightly said, Gajendra and so on, there are cases like that. But the whole point is, these are very rare exceptions.
Excuse me.
The general rule...
Excuse me. Also in the case of Lord Hanuman, he is supposed to be one of the topmost bhaktas of the Lord.
Yes.
And he has again taken the form of a monkey.
Yes.
It's again an animal form.
So there are many, many cases like this. But that is not the general way by which you can come to the platform of bhakti. You see, first of all, we should know that even Gajendra, he was already a very elevated devotee in the previous life. He was King Indradumna. And somehow by the Lord's arrangement, he was cursed to take the body of an elephant. And it was destined, he went back to Godhead ultimately. So we can see that he was already an elevated devotee. Similarly, King Bharat. Generally, it is said that if you perform bhakti, you are assured of a human body in the next life. But King Bharat, although he was such an elevated devotee, he had to get the body of a deer. But the remarkable thing is that even in the body of the deer, he remembered who he was in the previous life. He remembered that he should be careful about his bhakti in this life. So he remembered Krishna even in the life of a deer. So better a life of a deer where you remember Krishna than a human life where you don't remember Krishna. Therefore, Bhakti Vinod Thakur prays, Bhakti Vinod Thakur is a great acharya in our parampara. I would rather be born as a worm in a devotee's family where I can hear the holy name every day than to be a non-devotee Brahma. So although you have so many cases of exalted devotees, in animal bodies, but that is not the way that we can become devotees. If you want to become Krishna conscious, this is the way to get a human form of life. Because only in the human form of life do we have the intelligence to understand what is God, who am I, and to make efforts. In the animal species, if there is Agyata Sukriti, if you hear, then you make advancement. as a general rule. But you do not have that initiative to make advancement in spiritual life on your own effort. You have to depend simply on what others can feed you. But here you have your initiative to go out and come to the temple, discuss and ask these questions and get answers in Bhagavad Gita classes. That is not possible in the animal species of life. Although, if you go to the zoo and chant, you can make all the animals in the zoo Krishna conscious. You can make them all. That's what Lord Chaitanya did there. He went to Jharikhanda forest, as you can see this drawing here. And when Lord Chaitanya was doing kirtan, all the animals were dancing. Actually, it's not a figment of our imagination. It is not an imaginary story. It actually happened. All the tigers and all the lions, they were all dancing together. So they transcended bodily conception under spiritual influence. Lord Chaitanya is Lord Krishna himself. Also, you know the place called Sringeri. We were there recently. Sringeri, actually, why was it called Sringeri? Why is the place? What is the significance? Because Shankaracharya, when he went there, he saw that a mongoose and a snake were playing together. And normally, one is the food of the other. But here he saw, because of the only reason is that the place had such a holy influence, that the predatory instincts of the snake also, they actually were transformed into love and friendship. So then he made his fourth site there. Badrikashram, Jagannath Puri, Dwarka, and the fourth was Sringeri. So like that, under holy influence, you can transcend your bodily limitations. Whatever you may be in, if the holy name is chanted, even the ants and the worms in this room, in this temple, they are not ordinary worms and ants, believe me. Next life, they will get tremendous advantage. Probably they may get human life. Especially if some ant or some stuck up in some corner somewhere. Every day he is hearing the holy name. Poor fellow may think he's stuck, he can't go out or something. But actually, he is getting liberated. But then it doesn't mean that we should pray to become an ant, because then we can't make quick advancement. The way to make advancement, the general rule, is to get a human body. That's the answer. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.